As it turned out, the train had come to rest 3 kilometers from the end of the tunnel. Anya knew this because she'd counted every step they'd taken down the tunnel, needing to know just how close they'd come to being splattered across the landscape. They had begun finding small pieces of the wreck at least 1 kilometer from the crash site, and could only stand in stunned silence at what was left. Even the larger pieces were difficult to recognize as having once been part of a train. Vlad guided them past the flaming wreckage and up onto the station platform nearby, where a whale reached out and tried to kiss Anya. Or at least, that's what it seemed like to her. The mosaic covering the back wall of the station platform showed an enormous humpback whale breaching the water. It had been created with such artistry and skill that it gave the viewer the sense that the whale was moving toward them, stretching out of the surface of the wall. It was exquisite, and Anya felt a pang of sorrow that it was hidden down here in the dark. Vlad caught her staring and indicated the double doors leading off the platform.
Academy of Oceanography. Hall of Experimentation.
Vlad led them inside. Within moments, it was apparent to Anya that the mosaic was some witty designer's way of trying to put lipstick on a pig. The Academy of Oceanography's vaulted Hall of Experimentation was little better than a workshop of horrors. It had been more than 40 years since the facility had been operational, and much of the interior had been cleaned out. But even from what was left, Anya could see that the normal measures of oceanographic study were far removed from what had gone on here. They passed through a massive preservation room that still contained a number of specimens floating in oversized jars of formaldehyde. The lights of their headlamps reflected off the glass and created the illusion that the specimens were moving inside the tanks. Anya couldn't wait to get out of there. According to Vlad's information, there was supposed to be an exit to the tunnels inside one of the back offices. Sure enough, they found a gaping hole knocked into a wall at the exact location indicated. Vlad stuck his head inside the tunnel and looked around.
Perfect.
Given what they'd experienced so far on their search for the lost library, Anya was starting to believe that perfect was a code word for brace yourselves. But she was more than happy to leave the Academy of Oceanography and all its strange specimens behind. Even the grime of a 300-year-old tunnel seemed preferable to that. They fell into the same pattern they'd established underground previously. Vlad in front, sniffing out the trail. Anya in back, protecting the rear. And the less experienced Gianni in the middle. Vlad was still working from his notes, the recollections of a close friend who was no longer with them, he confided. And so the going was steady but slow. The tunnels were an odd mix of eras, from the brick-lined passages put together by Catherine the Great's work crews to the steel-reinforced corridors that were filled with the detritus of the Cold War. They had been walking for 30 minutes when they emerged from an earthen tunnel to find themselves standing in the middle of a corridor that reminded Anya of a super-secret laboratory straight out of a cheesy science fiction flick. A series of reinforced steel doors on either side of the corridor were arranged in a staggered sequence. Each had a thick plate glass window set in it. Vlad barely noticed the windows, but Gianni couldn't resist taking a peek. He edged up to one of the doors, looked through the window, and promptly recoiled, hurrying down the hall in Vlad's wake. After witnessing Gianni's odd reaction, Anya stepped up to see for herself. It didn't appear all that extraordinary to her, just a lab workroom like any other, though one that seemed to date back to the 60s. An old rotary telephone hung on the wall near the door, and Anya noticed that there was a corresponding space for one on her side, too. Lockers lined one side of the room, a wooden bench bolted to the floor in front of them, and she could see an old-style chemical protection suit hanging in one of the lockers that was open. Then she saw the corpse. He sat in a chair in front of a steel desk on the far side of the room, his head tilted forward on his chest as if he'd fallen asleep. Desiccated flesh and patches of pale hair still clung to his skull. On the table in front of him was an open container, half full of strange blue crystals. A pile of those same crystals sat on the table in front of him. Accident? Suicide? Anya couldn't tell, but the scene made her skin crawl. She hurried to catch up with the others. Farther down the tunnel, they encountered a series of seven chambers, each once covered entirely with painted murals that shouted of a time and an age only recently passed. Blue guitars danced beside red mushrooms through a field of musical notes, rainbows and unicorns, smiling sun faces, even slogans like groovy and peace and I love John Lennon. The lights on their headlamps grew a bit dimmer, and Vlad made them stop to exchange their old batteries for new ones. After a 5-minute break, they continued. Just a few more minutes brought them to the entrance of a bunker that must have been able to hold at least 3,000 people. The sight of it put a smile on Vlad's face. He pointed to the rock above their heads.
Cathedral of Christ the Savior, destroyed by Bolsheviks in 1930s. Very close to destination now.
10 minutes later, the tunnel opened up before them, revealing 3 new passageways. Only one of them showed up on the map. Because it was hand-drawn and therefore not to scale, they didn't know which of the 3 the map depicted. It was as good a reason as any to call a rest break. The 3 slumped to the ground, weary after a long hike through the tunnels and battling giant Russians and speeding trains. Anya studied the 3 routes. None of the routes looked noticeably different, and it was going to be difficult choosing between them. That's when she saw it. Over the entrance to the tunnel, someone had carved a crude representation of a dog's head next to a broom. She had to squint to see it, and she might have passed both carvings off as a trick of the rock, a result of natural formations rather than intentional design, if it weren't for what she knew of Ivan's secret police. Often called the Tsar's dogs, they'd used the severed head of a dog lying next to a broom as a symbol of their strength. Anya got up, poured a little water on her hand, and wiped down the symbols. With the dust forced out of their grooves, the shapes stood out in stark contrast to the rest of the rock. Fioravanti and his crew probably knew the tunnels well enough after a few weeks to move about without the help of any kind of markers. But she remembered from Fioravanti's journal that Tsar Ivan had assigned squads of the Oprichniki to watch over the crew as they got close to the end of the project, and being underground had probably frightened them considerably. Not wanting to get lost in the maze, some enterprising Oprichniki soldier had clearly carved a symbol over the mouth of the tunnel.
Good on you!
If my instincts are right, we should have circumvented the cave-in at this point and reconnected with Fioravanti's original route. We shouldn't be far from the location of the vault. Not far at all.
Before anyone could respond, armed men rushed out of the darkness and surrounded them. 2 men kicked Vlad's feet out from under him and shoved a gun in his face. That was enough to keep them from resisting further. The newcomers were dressed in just the same fashion as the armed men they had encountered back at the former KGB training center in Ramenskoye. Anya wasn't surprised to see their scar-faced leader emerge from a nearby tunnel seconds after she and her companions were secured. What was surprising was the fact that he was accompanied by an older man who appeared to wear a colonel's decoration.
Ah, Miss Creed. So good to make your acquaintance. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Colonel Viktor Goshenko of the Russian Federal Security Service. And this is Sergeant Danislov, who I think you've already met. I understand that one of you has a map. If that map were to be handed over to me without argument in the next 30 seconds, I would guarantee you could walk away from here with your lives intact. Provided, of course, you never speak of this again.
Typical ex-KGB thugs.
The sergeant heard the remark and walked casually to Vlad.
No takers? Are you sure? We're going to find the map anyway, one way or another.
How the hell does he know it exists in the first place?
Goshenko turned to Gianni.
Who has the map?
She does. Would you like me to get it for you? I know exactly where she keeps it.
Yes, for the sake of the people of Russia, I would like you to get the map for me.
Turn the library over to the people of Russia? Are you insane? Do you think I went through all the trouble to get that windbag Davies on board to finance this search, only to allow you to come along and let it slip through my fingers? There are buyers who would pay millions just for a single book from that library, never mind several major volumes.
Gianni turned away in disgust and looked back at Koshenko. The colonel shook his head and then advanced on Anya.
We have two options at this point. Option one, you can give up the map of your own accord. Or two, I can order my men to hold you down and search you until they find it. I assure you, the first one will be far more pleasant than the second.
With no real choice before her, Anya gave up the map. Koshenko, Danislav, and Gianni moved just inside the entrance to the next section of tunnel to study it, leaving Vlad and Anya surrounded by several armed guards. Vlad looked at her once, pointedly, then stared for a moment at the guards standing a few feet away from her. He looked at her again to make sure she was watching, then glanced down at himself once before looking over at the guards standing close to him. The message was simple enough.
We're getting out of here. You take out those guys over there, I get these guys over here, and then we'll deal with whatever happens next.
Anya thought it was a marvelous plan. Vlad glanced at the tunnel entrance. Then he surged to his feet. He started with the man closest to him. Then he wheeled on the next two men, slamming their heads together. Anya lunged toward the nearest of her captors. Anya buried 3 feet of tempered steel into the man's chest. She snatched the man's gun as he fell.
Vlad!
Anya tossed the weapon in his direction.
Shoot her!
Anya dove forward, releasing the sword as she went, somersaulting toward the second gunman. She rolled up to one knee. The blade caught the gunman under the ear and continued all the way out the other side of his neck. The third man was backing away as he brought his gun up. Anya brought her sword back over her shoulder and whipped it forward. It drilled him through the throat. She turned to see Vlad exchanging shots with two of the other Russians from Denislav's group. A bullet winged him in the hip, and he sagged slightly on that side, but that didn't stop him. Denislav came stalking across the room, pointing his gun at Vlad's unprotected back.
No!
Anya leaped, the sword drawn back over her head. Denislav swung his arm about and pointed the gun in her face and pulled the trigger. Anya Creed fell in an ungraceful heap at the feet of Sergeant Danislav. He stood there, arm outstretched, gun pointed at the Creed woman's head, but she didn't move. Koshenko and Gianni stepped into the room and approached Danislav.
Nicely done.
The colonel watched as Danislav bent over the woman's body. At first, he thought the other man was feeling for a pulse, but then he came away with something small and red in his hand. It was the tracking device that Gianni had slipped onto the back of her fireman's jacket hours before, during the confrontation in the old KGB training center. Gianni had been a godsend. There was no way any of his men could have gotten close enough to plant that tracker on Creed, and without it, they wouldn't have been able to hang so far behind them through the tunnels. Danislav slipped the locator into his pocket. But he must have felt Goshenko's gaze on him, because he glanced up suddenly and nodded once in respect. Koshenko did the same in return. Beside him, the Italian was engrossed in the map.
I trust you know how to get us to the vault, especially since the good sergeant just gunned down your competition.
Of course I do. I'm the one who discovered Fioravanti's journal in the first place.
Koshenko didn't care if Fioravanti himself had told him where the vault was buried, as long as the Italian could take him there. The colonel hadn't doubted Creed's abilities, but this idiot... He shook his head. He'd deal with that when the time came, he supposed. For now, he wanted to get them underway. First, though, they needed to get rid of the bodies.
You?
Yes, sir.
Go into the tunnels and find a suitable dumping ground for the corpses.
Right away, sir.
The other men searched the bodies of their former comrades for anything that might identify them.
Good riddance. Anyone stupid enough to get themselves killed by a pair of unarmed captives deserves to die. Except, they weren't really unarmed, were they?
When he'd first heard the commotion, he thought he'd seen something flash in the Creed woman's hand. But it wasn't until he observed that final showdown between her and Danislav that he realized what he was looking at.
The bitch was wielding a sword that was at least as long as my arm. Perhaps even longer. Where the hell did it come from? And more important, where the hell has it gone?
Sir, I found a suitable location to get rid of the bodies. A sunken chamber that's already full of skeletons.
Excellent. Good job.
Goshenko forgot about the sword Creed had been using and focused on more important matters, like finding that library at long last. When consciousness returned, memories flashed in her mind's eye. Gianni's contempt, Goshenko's gloating, the scar-faced Russian raising his weapon in her direction, the half-mad, half-desperate charge she'd made across the room, hoping to reach the gunman before he could pull the trigger. In that moment, she'd found out just how fast she actually was.
Not fast enough, and yet here I am, wherever the hell here happens to be.
She was in utter darkness. She couldn't see a thing, not even when she held her hand directly in front of her face and waved it back and forth. She reached up toward her forehead, looking for the headlamp she'd been wearing before she'd been shot. It was gone, perhaps ripped away by the force of the shot, perhaps stripped from her after she was down. Fear gripped her as a new notion occurred to her.
What if I'm not in darkness at all, but I've lost the ability to see?
Her head pounded like a pile driver, and her stomach roiled with nausea, so it wasn't that much of a stretch to think she'd been blinded.
Condition, then situation.
Tentatively, Anya reached up with her left hand and touched her temple. A bolt of pain shot through her head, and her hand came away sticky with blood. She gritted her teeth. This time, she moved her fingers farther back along her skull. Same results. The bullet had burned a furrow down the side of her head, just below the hairline. A half inch to the left, and she would have ended up with a gaping hole in the back of her skull instead. The wound hurt a lot, and Anya worried that it had done more harm than she knew, that some vital connection to something, like her eyes, might have been damaged by the impact. She had little doubt the nausea and loss of equilibrium were a result of the injury as well. The good news was that the rest of her seemed to be intact and that she was relatively mobile. Tentatively, she drew her legs up underneath her and rose to a crouch. She stretched her hands out on either side, the tips of her fingers balancing her against the surface she'd been sitting on, which turned out to be cold and slightly damp stone. As she began to think more clearly and her fear receded, she began to put two and two together. Stone beneath her feet, complete darkness all around. It seemed likely that she was still underground, perhaps even in the cavern where she'd been shot. She felt the urge to call out to see if there was anybody nearby. If the Russians, who no doubt thought she was dead, heard her, they would come back to finish what they had started. Without the ability to see, she would be unable to defend herself.
So, no shouting, then.
Instead, she ran her hands along the stone surface, looking for anything that might be of help to her. She got down on her hands and knees and inched forward, still searching, not knowing what she would find. She was somehow more afraid of not finding anything at all, afraid that the darkness would just go on, that she would wander down here for weeks until she took a wrong step and ended up at the bottom of a deep hole from which she couldn't escape. The feel of flesh beneath her fingertips caused her to recoil violently. That, in turn, impacted her hard-won equilibrium and set her head pounding even harder. She fought the urge to vomit and waited for her head to stop spinning before trying again, reaching out tentatively with one hand, hoping like hell the body was still there, that it hadn't gotten up and moved. Her fingers touched dead flesh again. Gritting her teeth, she felt around in front of her with both hands, ignoring how she felt about touching the cooling flesh and the half-dried viscous fluid she knew to be blood. Given the man's size, it only took her a moment to recognize who it was.
Vladimir. Oh.
Anya bowed her head in grief. She genuinely liked Vlad. He didn't deserve what had befallen him. Even worse, he'd died in an attempt to save her life rather than his own. The world would forever be reduced from the loss of a man like him.
The world has too few heroes as it is.
After a moment, she wiped the tears from her face, thought an apology in the dead man's direction, and then put her squeamishness to the side and went to work. She checked the pockets of his fireman's coat first and hit the jackpot right away. The granola bar and bottle of water were excellent finds, no doubt about that. But when her fingers found the 3-inch-long, narrow plastic tube, her heart began to beat faster. She gripped the tube in both hands and tried to break it in two. It bent, just as she expected it to. Green light spilled from between her hands. Anya decided there wasn't anything more beautiful in the world than a chemical light stick. She was relieved to know that there was nothing wrong with her eyes. She raised the light stick above her head and looked around. Vlad's corpse lay at her feet. The bullet that had killed him had struck him high in the neck, tearing out his throat and severing his carotid artery. He probably hadn't lived more than a moment after that, and for that, Anya was glad. He was still dressed in the clothes he'd been wearing when she had last seen him. Apparently, his killers hadn't had the time or the inclination to strip him of his possessions. The glow of the light stick didn't reach much more than a foot beyond Vlad's corpse, but at the very edge of its light, Anya could see his discarded fireman's helmet. On the helmet, affixed there with a rubber headband, was Vlad's spelunking lamp. Anya scrambled over his body and dashed forward, only to come to an abrupt halt as she saw what was strewn across the floor at the far edge of the light. Skeletons. Dozens, if not more, of skeletons. Anya put the light stick on the floor and picked up Vlad's fireman's helmet. There was no way she was going to be able to wear it over the wound on the side of her head, but all she wanted was the headlamp. Stripping it off, she set the helmet back down and then held the lamp near the light stick and looked it over. It appeared intact except for a few nicks and scrapes. She found the light switch and with a silent prayer heavenward, she angled the headlamp away from her face and turned it on. Light. Crisp, clear, white light. Anya felt immeasurably better. She had a little food, some water, and light. It seemed she might get out of this after all. Anya stood and took a look around. She was in a small chamber that was maybe 15 feet across at its widest point. It had a low ceiling and a sunken floor. The tunnel mouth was a good 6 feet above it. She and Vlad were near the entrance, right where she would expect them to be if their bodies had been tossed from the mouth of the tunnel. The bodies of the men she and Vlad had killed during their abortive break for freedom were stacked a few feet farther into the room, laid out with far more respect than her own remains had been. Past the more recent bodies, she stared at the dozens of skeletons, some still dressed in scraps of clothing, perhaps uniforms of some kind. Anya moved to take a closer look. They were all male. She could tell that immediately just by looking at the structure of the pelvic bones. Their ages were harder to pinpoint. If she had to say, she would guess they ranged from teenage boys to grown men, though she could easily have been off. It would take a forensic anthropologist to determine their exact ages. She was just making an educated guess. She had no trouble identifying the sword cuts and bullet wounds on the bones, however. She'd seen too many of these marks not to recognize them for what they were. These men had all suffered a violent death at the hands of someone else.
What are the skeletons of murdered men doing way down here?
Then it hit her.
Fioravanti and his men.
She was looking at the remains of the crew that had been brought in to build the vault for Ivan and then were slaughtered to keep the Tsar's secret. Anya stared at them, stirred by their fate and their lack of a proper burial. It just wasn't right. Anya made a silent promise to herself. If she got out of here alive, she'd make sure that they weren't left down here for eternity. She turned her attention back to her immediate need, which was to find a way out. Vlad's body had still been slightly warm when she'd touched it, which meant that it hadn't been long since they had been dumped here like so much discarded trash.
Gianni, that bastard.
With the help of the light, she searched the bodies of the dead FSS agents, but didn't find anything useful. She then gave Vlad's body another once-over. She picked up his helmet, and after a moment's hesitation, placed it over his face.
I'll be back for you, Vlad.
She rose and moved to the mouth of the tunnel. The opening was too high for her to pull herself up without help. Examining the area just below the opening, she found what she thought was a suitable place. She jammed her sword deep into the earth at that point, creating a makeshift step. The activity sent pain shooting through her head, but she ignored it. If she wanted to get out of here, she didn't have any choice. She leaned on the sword, trying to move it, but it was stuck in there pretty good, which was just the way she wanted it. Anya backed up a few yards. She ran at the wall, and at the last second, she stepped up onto the extended blade of her sword and vaulted herself upward. She grasped at the side of the entrance, scrambling for purchase. Her foot caught on a small ledge, giving her some balance. Anya hauled herself up and out of the grave chamber. Below her, the sword jammed into the cavern wall winked out of existence. Footsteps up ahead. Goshenko and his men.
What can I do against Goshenko and his men? They think I'm dead. They won't be looking for me, and so I have the opportunity I need to get away from them.
But all Anya could think about was the way Vlad and she had been gunned down in cold blood, their bodies left behind to rot in some forgotten chamber deep underground. Or the expression on Gianni's face when he'd fingered her as having the map, clearly aware of just what the colonel had in mind for them. Anya turned in the direction of the footsteps and quietly headed that way. From her vantage point a short way back down the tunnel, Anya could see into the chamber in front of her, where Gianni and the FSS Colonel Goshenko were.
I'm telling you, it should be right here!
Anya crept a little closer. She could see Goshenko's henchman, Danislav, over to one side, along with two of the other men they'd encountered earlier. The thugs had been pressed into service as light-bearers, standing there holding bright halogen lanterns over their heads so the others could see the room. The rest of the security team was missing. Either they were within a section of the room she couldn't see, or else Goshenko had sent them off on another task, not wanting to share the moment of discovery. Anya sincerely hoped it was the latter. That would make what she was about to do much easier. The group stood within an intricately carved stone vault that looked as if it had been designed to hold the Library of Gold. Even from here, Anya could see the swirl of colors from the Italian marble that made up the complex design covering the floor, and the stone shelves covering the walls as far as she could see, except the shelves were empty. The library, if it had ever been here, was gone.
You told me you could lead me to the library. Where is it?
Flustered, Gianni stalked over to a section of the shelves and began examining it closely, no doubt looking for some sign that the books had been here. He pulled out the map, but he barely glanced at it before staring at the empty shelves around him again.
It should be right here! The map says so! Someone must have been here before us, must have smuggled the library out of hiding and moved it to a new location. That's the only explanation I can think of!
Anya wasn't shocked at all when it happened. Goshenko stared at Gianni a moment, as if weighing something in his mind, and then made a simple hand gesture to Danislav. Danislav smoothly drew a pistol from his holster.
No, no, please, let me...
Gianni stood there for a moment, mouth open, and then toppled over. Danislav calmly put a third bullet into Gianni's head to finish the job.
When you told me the plan hinged on this simpleton, I warned you it might come to this.
He picked up the map that had fallen from Gianni's hands and gave it to Goshenko. The colonel glanced at it, then tucked it away. Both men headed for the doorway. Anya quietly turned and made her way back up the tunnel to where she had seen a small opening off to one side. She crawled into the space and pulled her legs in close, doing her best to make herself as small a target as possible. No sooner had she frozen in place than the light from the lanterns illuminated the passageway outside, and the small group of men strode past. She waited several minutes after they had left, then slowly crept out of the main tunnel. Her light was still off, leaving her surrounded by darkness, but this time she didn't mind. She looked in the direction the others had gone, but didn't see anything, not even a faint whisper of light floating back behind them. Satisfied that they were gone, Anya flicked Vlad's headlamp back on and headed back toward the vault. Unlike Gianni, Anya had plenty of experience with clever men who devoted their time and energy to devising hiding places for their sacred objects and treasures. She disagreed with Gianni's assessment. She didn't think the library had been smuggled away. The room they'd been standing in was a decoy. Anya turned in place slowly, intensely examining the room. The chamber was an octagon, about 30 feet across. There were 12 shelves on each of the 8 wall sections, for a total of 96 shelves. A lot of information had sprung up about the library over the years, and, as with most other legends, Anya knew that the majority of it was complete crap. But sometimes there were kernels of truth mixed up in the legends. The library was supposed to contain more than 1,000 volumes. These were not slim volumes either, certainly nothing like the average book you might pick up in any bookstore today, but thick, highly decorated tomes. And as such, they took up a lot of space.
There's no way 1,000 volumes could fit in this small a space.
That was the first clue. The second was the number of shelves. Anya thought back to the clue they had discovered in the Gospel of Gold, the one that had led them to the map, which in turn had led them here.
268.
That's all it had said, which was why she found it so interesting that when multiplied together, those three numbers equaled the number of shelves in the room she was standing in. Anya had learned long ago that there wasn't any such thing as a coincidence when it came to hunting for buried treasure. Counting clockwise from the entranceway, she walked over to the second set of shelves and pushed down on the second shelf from the top. Nothing happened. She nodded to herself, then pushed down on the second shelf from the bottom. It shifted slightly.
Gotcha.
She crossed the room and moved to the sixth wall section. She counted six shelves from the bottom and repeated the procedure. Grinning now, pleased she had managed to figure it out without too much difficulty, she crossed to the eighth and final section. Counting up eight shelves, she pressed down for a third time. Turning, Anya gaped in surprise. The center of the room had opened up in an iris, revealing the stone steps that led down toward the true treasure vault. With her heart pounding in excitement, Anya began to descend. The passage ahead of her was much narrower than any of the others she'd encountered so far in their search for the library. It wasn't wide enough for two people to walk abreast at the same time, and that gave Anya pause as she prepared to step off the stairs.
Why create a passage so narrow? Of course, it's to keep your target within a specified area.
Anya went back up the stairs and out into the main corridor. She hunted until she found a rock about the size of a cantaloupe. She then went back down the stairs. Squatting at the edge of the last step, Anya rolled the rock down the length of the corridor. It tumbled end over end for a good 10 feet before coming to rest in the middle of the passage. It sat there. Nothing happened. She shrugged, about to step off the stairs, when the stone flooring beneath her makeshift trigger suddenly sank about 2 inches. Anya barely had time to turn her face away. Musket balls came out of both walls simultaneously, and Anya knew she would have been torn to ribbons if she'd been caught in that narrow space. When the gunfire started, Colonel Goshenko and Sergeant Denisov stopped and looked behind them. Without a word, they turned and retraced their steps to the empty treasure vault. When the cacophony finally stopped, Anya stood and surveyed the scene. She could now see a snake-like pattern of raised flagstones revealed on the floor of the corridor, hidden rooms and pressure plate traps. She was torn between respect for Fioravanti's cleverness and a desire to go back in time and strangle the man. Satisfied that the passage in front of her was now free of obstacles, Anya stepped out onto the raised flagstones and made her way along the length of the corridor. What she found at the other end made her stare in wonder. A vast space opened up before her. This chamber was even more beautifully adorned than the false library above. The floors were inlaid with bright marble that reflected her light back at her. The ceiling had been painted in traditional Renaissance style, the oil paints preserved so well in the dry underground climate. Anya imagined they hadn't changed since the day they'd been painted there by Fioravanti. The shelves were polished stone, fashioned right out of the living rock and spanning the entire circumference of the room. But it was what those shelves held that truly captured her attention. Books and scrolls and tomes of all kinds were lined up in rows, each one in its own special place. Gold and precious jewels gleamed back at her from hundreds of covers. The decorative additions to the books made them worth millions. The historical value of many of the texts made them priceless. In the center of the room, a single closed book rested on a pedestal all by itself. Resolving to solve that puzzle momentarily, she turned her attention to the rest of the library.
You are a difficult woman to kill, Miss Creed.
Colonel Victor Goshenko of the FSS stood just inside the library, looking around in wonder. He had no concerns that Anya might try to hurt him, since his ever-present watchdog, Sergeant Danislav, stood beside him, staring at her all too eagerly.
If you'd given him more time, Gianni would have found it as well.
I doubt that, Miss Creed. You were the one I was putting my money on. Surely you're smart enough to have figured that out. That fool Trevino was just there as insurance. A way of making sure I got what I wanted should something happen to you. You have no idea how delighted I am to see you alive and well. I was sorely disappointed when you startled us all by charging my man Danislav here and forced him to shoot you in self-defense. Where did that sword come from anyway? What's wrong? Cat got your tongue? You were more than happy to give your opinion a moment ago.
Without another word, Goshenko signaled Danislav. As the sergeant went for the gun on his belt, Anya whipped her right hand up behind her back. The blade punched through his body just below his armpit and came out the other side. Anya was confident he was dead. The sword winked out of existence. A split second later, it was back in Anya's hand. She spun to the left, searching for Goshenko. The bullet passed through her calf and knocked her off her feet. She rolled frantically to the left. She hit the pedestal in the middle of the room and came to an abrupt halt. Gritting her teeth in pain, Anya peeked out from behind the pedestal. She didn't see him.
Over here!
Fully expecting a bullet through the head at any moment, Anya slowly turned the other way. Goshenko stood with his back to one of the shelves, his pistol pointed straight at her.
On your feet!
Using the pedestal for support, Anya dragged herself to her feet. She might be caught in Goshenko's sights, but she'd be damned if she went out meekly. Glancing down, she happened to note the title etched into the cover of the tome resting atop the pedestal. Apocalisse.
Italian for apocalypse.
In all the literature she'd read on the Library of Gold, she'd never heard of a single book by that title. Never mind one written in Italian.
Fiora Vanti, oh, you clever devil!
Goshenko took two steps forward and centered the gun on the bridge of Anya's nose.
From the moment I heard your name, I knew you'd be trouble. You've been extraordinarily lucky so far, but this is where it ends. I've had enough of your meddling.
But I'm not done yet, Colonel.
She slammed her hands down on the cover of the book. The bullet passed by her face and embedded itself into a tome on the shelf behind her. Beneath the weight of her hands, the book sank down into the pedestal just as Fioravanti had intended. The descent of the book set off giant clockwork mechanisms embedded deep in the walls behind the bookshelves. A stone rocketed toward a piece of metal, striking a spark. Goshenko was buried beneath a thundering pile of debris. Anya saw her chance to escape. She remembered a detail in Fioravanti's recounting of his last day.
I constructed an emergency tunnel at the rear of the vault.
Anya scanned the rear wall.
There.
A 3-foot section of the wall collapsed inward, revealing itself to be plaster slapped over a wooden frame and painted to look like the rock around it. Beyond it, a narrow tunnel beckoned her.
Move!
She quickly scrambled forward. Anya crashed to the ground, and this time she stayed there. She kicked and clawed her way forward, expecting at any moment to be buried, but somehow avoiding the worst of it until she reached the entrance to the emergency tunnel and threw herself in. Behind her, the ceiling directly above the pedestal suddenly gave way. Anya curled up against one side of the tunnel, drew up her knees, and tucked her face into them with her hands over her head. Anya cautiously raised her head and found herself once again shrouded in darkness. The headlamp she'd been wearing, strapped to her arm, had been smashed. She was trapped in the dark. But then she remembered the gear she'd taken off Vladimir and reached into her pocket for the light stick. Thankfully, she felt it. The light it provided wasn't all that bright, but it allowed Anya to take stock of the situation. She saw immediately that the entrance back into the vault had been blocked off by the cave-in. That left only the emergency exit tunnel. Fioravanti's journal had said that the tunnel ran directly to the surface. She hoped that was true. The light stick would only last so long. With the light stick in one hand and her sword in the other, Anya set out for the surface. An hour later, she emerged from the tunnel to find herself in the midst of the Bolshaya Pirogovskaya Street subway station. She sent the sword back to the otherwear, boosted herself up onto the platform, and climbed the stairs. Several people stood on the platform waiting for the next train. They watched her curiously, but no one tried to stop her. Once out on the street, she hailed a taxi and asked the cabbie to take her directly to the nearest shopping plaza. He hesitated when he got a good look at her, taking note of the fact that she was covered with dirt and was wearing a filthy, blood-stained bandage around her head and another around her leg. Anticipating his objections, she showed him that she actually had enough cash to be able to pay him when they arrived, and that seemed to settle the matter. She had him wait outside while she bought a change of clothes in one store and a small bottle of Betadine and a first aid kit in another. She then used the restroom to clean herself up. The cut on the side of her head wasn't all that bad. Like any head wound, it had bled a lot, but wasn't that deep. And she felt considerably better once it had been coated with antibacterial ointment and covered with a wide bandage. The calf wound was another story. The bullet had gone clean through, which saved her the trouble of trying to dig out a slug, but left her with a half-inch hole in her leg that was going to get rapidly worse if she didn't do something about it. Gritting her teeth, she put her leg up in the sink and turned on the cold water, letting it wash directly through the wound. It hurt. A lot. After a few minutes, she patted it gently with a cloth, then poured some of the betadine directly into the wound. The iodine solution would help stop an infection until she could get the wound looked at by a doctor. She packed both sides with dry gauze, then wrapped the entire wound with tape. When she emerged from the bathroom, her hands were shaking, but she looked considerably better, the cut on her head hidden beneath a bandana, which in turn was covered with a loose-fitting baseball cap. She'd noticed an internet cafe down the street upon arrival, so she paid the cabbie for his time and walked to it, slipping inside just as it opened for the morning. She got herself a hot chocolate and a pastry to provide some immediate energy, then paid for a half hour of computer time and the use of a headset microphone combination. She took her food and gear to a station near the back of the room where she would still have some privacy once the cafe started to fill up. Then she logged in. After checking that she had a decent connection, she downloaded Skype and used it to place a direct call to Sir Charles Davies' home telephone. He must have been waiting by the phone, despite the late hour in the U.S. He answered it on the first ring. Once he'd confirmed the call was from her, he didn't ask about the library. He asked about her. It made confessing her failure to him that much easier.
Are you all right?
No, I'm not all right. Neither are Gianni or Vladimir.
Tell me what happened.
Anya did. She told him everything, including some of the things she'd left out the last time they'd talked. She told him about Gianni's treachery and of how he'd reported their whereabouts and discoveries to the FSS colonel, Goshenko. She described how Vladimir had died trying to give her time to escape when at last they'd been taken captive, and how she'd had no choice but to leave his body down in the tunnels. She told him of the cleverness of Fioravanti's design for the library, and how she'd finally discovered the real entrance, how she'd seen the books that Ivan the Terrible had hidden away from the world, and how, in the end, she'd been forced to bury it under a ton of earth and rock to keep it out of Goshenko's hands, and to stay alive. It was a long conversation. By the time she was finished, Anya felt as if a heavy burden had been lifted from her shoulders. Whatever happened now, she was ready to deal with it.
I'd say it's time we got you out of there.
I'd have to agree.
I'll make some calls to someone I know over at the embassy. Give me half an hour and then head directly there. Ask for James Wiley when you arrive. He'll be able to get you a new passport. In the meantime, I'll book you a ticket on a flight back to New York. All you'll have to do is pick it up at the airport once you have your passport dealt with. Understood?
It sounded like a plan to Anya. She finished her cocoa, then returned to the street and hailed another cab. This one didn't give her any grief when she asked him to take her to the U.S. Embassy. During the drive, her thoughts turned to the FSS colonel, Goshenko. She wondered how long he'd been in cahoots with Gianni, the two of them driven by their need to share in the millions they would get by selling the library on the black market, and how they had originally gotten together. She guessed that Goshenko had been working through unofficial channels, using the resources and manpower of his agency for his personal business. She'd begun to suspect that was the case long before she could even give the FSS colonel a name, when he'd just been a shadowy force chasing them for unknown reasons. Someone working the system properly would have issued arrest warrants and had the entire law enforcement community in Moscow looking for them. When that didn't happen, especially after she'd been forced to kill a man in self-defense inside the Marriott, she'd known something wasn't right. At least now she understood how the FSS had tracked them down so many times. With Gianni to feed their position to Danislav and Goshenko, all they'd had to do was sit back and wait for Anya and Vlad to locate the library, then take it for themselves. Her heart ached when she thought of Vlad's death. He'd been a good man, one who was as passionate about his work as she was about hers, and that was something she could understand at a deep level.
Oh, shit. Figures.
Anya looked up to see that they were just down the street from the embassy, the 9-story gold and white building looming over those on either side of it. But there appeared to be some kind of commotion. Several cars were parked haphazardly in front of the main entrance, their doors open, while men in dark suits were shouting and arguing with the Marine guards standing there. There were nearly a dozen cars in front of them, but traffic was at a standstill because of the commotion. Anya's driver put the car in park and got halfway out. After a moment, he got back inside.
What's going on?
Security service. Looking for someone.
Anya looked out her own window. One of the men looked familiar. The Russians suddenly stopped arguing and turned away. As they did so, Anya got a good look at their leader and froze, not believing what her eyes were seeing. Despite the bruises that mottled his face, Sergeant Arkady Danislav was easy to recognize from the scar on his cheek. He was holding himself very stiffly, a result, no doubt, of the wound she had given him. A wound that probably would have killed 9 out of 10 men. Apparently, Danislav was made of sterner stuff. He looked up then, his dark eyes taking in the cars stopped in the street, and for a moment Anya thought he had seen her. Bile rose in her throat. There was no way for her to get into the embassy now, not with Danislav and his men watching the front gates. She thought furiously for a moment, then turned to the driver.
Forget the embassy. Please take me to the airport instead.
It took them nearly a half hour to get to the airport, and by that time, the cab fare had eaten up almost all of what little money Anya had. After paying him, she barely had enough to buy a decent meal. Hopefully, she wouldn't be here long enough to need any more. She entered the terminal, frantically trying to figure out what to do, and constantly looking over her shoulder for the arrival of Danislav and his FSS goons. If they were even real FSS agents. For all she knew, they were just mercenaries that Goshenko had recruited to help him with his dirty work. Sir Charles Davies had sent her the ticket information by email, and she'd printed it out before signing off in the internet cafe. She pulled the paper out of her pocket, found the proper airline, and then printed out her boarding pass with the help of her record locator number. Now she had a physical ticket, but the truth was that it was of little use to her since she didn't have any way to get past the security screen and over to the departure gate. One needed a passport for that. She found an empty seat and sat down, taking the weight off her leg for a few minutes while she tried to work out a solution. She was having trouble concentrating. The longer she sat there, the more she felt as if everyone's eyes were on her. She was obviously injured and had no luggage, never mind what she was sure was a worried, possibly even frantic look on her face. All she needed now was for some international Chasing History's Monsters fan to recognize her and throw her picture up on Facebook, and her day would be complete.
International fan.
Anya lurched to her feet, the tiniest hope flickering in her heart. She began searching her pockets.
He gave me his card. All I have to do is find his card.
And then she remembered. She didn't have Yuri's card. It was back at Vlad's with her backpack and the rest of her belongings. But that didn't mean the idea wasn't a good one. She began to move through the airport in the direction of the security screening area. She slowed as she drew closer, looking for one of those soft blue uniforms she'd seen that first night, the night she'd met Yuri after waiting around for what felt like hours in a windowless interrogation room. Spotting one, she worked her way through the moving crowd until she reached the officer in question. It was a woman, tall and severe, with a pinched face and straw-colored hair that had been secured in a tight bun atop her head. She did not look happy at Anya's approach.
Excuse me.
Yes?
I need to get a message to my friend, Yuri Basilovich. I've lost my phone, my purse, even my ID. I know Yuri will help me if I can just talk to him. Please?
He's busy. You'll need to make an appointment.
Look, I'm sorry, but I really need to talk with Yuri. Can you just call him, please? Tell him Anya needs his help, please.
Stay here.
The officer disappeared behind the secure area to hopefully hunt down Yuri. She was gone a long time, and Anya began to grow more and more nervous as she thought about what Danislav would do. He clearly thought she had survived. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been looking for her at the embassy. Anya had a good view of the entrance from where she was standing, and right at that moment, a group of sedans charged to a stop out front. Car doors were flung open, members of the public were pushed out of the way, and Danislav and his men entered the airport.
Oh no, not now.
Danislav and his men spread out, began moving through all the passengers, checking faces. She turned, preparing to run.
Miss Creed?
Anya spun around and discovered Yuri standing on the other side of the caution tape. His expression fell when he saw how battered she was.
Holy Mary! What happened to you?
Her!
Anya cast a frantic glance over her shoulder. Danislav and his men were converging on a dark-haired girl about the same age as her. She turned back to Yuri.
I can't explain it right now, but I'm in trouble and I need your help. I wouldn't ask if it wasn't urgent.
He took a look over her shoulder and his expression hardened.
This way.
Yuri took her by the arm and led her through the security area. He took her into a small office and closed the blinds while she stood nervously watching. Yuri faced her, his expression serious.
Have you done something to harm my country?
No.
Does that imp, jackass out there have a legitimate reason to be chasing you?
No.
Do you have your passport?
No, I'm afraid not.
Ah, now I understand. You want me to escort you onto your flight so that idiot out there does not find you.
Yes. Would you do that for me?
Anya, I'm your number one fan! Of course I will do that.
In the end, it wound up being rather anticlimactic. Yuri monitored the boarding process from the computer in his office, and just before the plane was scheduled to depart, he commandeered a hospitality cart and drove her directly to the aircraft. He had a word or two with the flight crew and pilot, then led her aboard and put her in the only empty seat in first class.
I don't know how to thank you enough.
Someday, you come back to Russia and tell me what happened. In the meantime, it will be our secret. And I will laugh every time I see that fool from FSS. Da?
Da.
The flight crew began preparing the cabin for takeoff, and Yuri gave her a big hug before slipping off the plane. Anya spent an anxious half hour after that, expecting the aircraft to be called back at the last minute, praying there wasn't a mechanical or weather delay that would keep them on the ground. It was only when they finally got into the air and the airplane effectively became U.S. soil for diplomatic purposes that she relaxed. She must have fallen asleep for the duration of the flight, because the next thing she knew, the flight attendant was gently shaking her awake.
Welcome back to New York.
Anya smiled. She couldn't think of anywhere else she'd rather be.
Angel Library of Gold is a graphic audio production. Rogue Angel trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2012, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, Bradley Smith, Gregory Gorton, Michael Glenn, Jeff Allen, James Lewis, Thomas Keegan, Tim Getman, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, David Coyne, Kimberly Gilbert, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, Danny Gavigan, Dylan Lynch, and Lily Beacon. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for Lilith St. Crow's Dante Valentine series and Elizabeth Moon's Vada's War. Available at roadstops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
What is the meaning of this?
No, Galatinov will leave this place alive.
You goddamn dogs!
Mother! Run, Mikhail! Run!
Get the boy!
Father.
I'm not your father, boy. Why do you persist in calling to ghosts?
I want to go home.
You are home.
Lieutenant Colonel Vogt, please come in.
I don't have much time. Field Marshal Rommel is waiting. I assume these are up to the minute?
Yes, sir.
We'll all toast the success of Panzer Army Africa on the banks of the Nile. Heil Hitler. Mein Gott.
Help me! Help me!
Kill it!
Hold up! Hurry! We've got to stop that beast! Go! Run it down!
It knows. That man knows.
We're in a mine pit!
Shall I wait here, sir?
Yes, for now.
So Gallatin served with distinction in North Africa? That was 2 years ago. If he's been out of service since then, what makes you people think he can handle the job?
Because Major Gallatin is a professional. Major?
Come in.
Couldn't have picked a more desolate place, could you?
I couldn't find one. I am retired.
But, sir, can we at least brief you on what the mission involves?
All right.
There's an American agent in Paris.
Adams is code name.
Your intelligence boys got a coded message from Adam a little more than 2 weeks ago. He said there's something big in the works. He was being watched, and he had information that had to be brought out of France by personal courier.
By 90 days after D-Day, we're planning on having more than 1 million boys over there to kick Hitler's ass. And we'd sure better know what's in the Nazis' hand.
Death. I'm sorry. Find someone else.
But sir...
I said I retired.
Let's talk, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Michael, I want you to go to Paris.
Is it that vital?
Yes. If the Gestapo is watching Adam so closely, you can be certain he has information they don't want getting out. With your special talents, there's a possibility you can get in and out under the nose of the Gestapo.
All right. But my parachute training's rusty.
You. We're screwed! You want to scrub the drop?
I'm going!
Welcome to France. You'll be leaving grand entrances, don't you?
Any entrance I survive is grand.
We have to get you to a safe place. Are you ready to run?
Always.
from international best-selling author Robert R. McCammon. A compelling tale of espionage and supernatural horror. The Wolf's Hour. In rich, vibrant, graphic audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.